Here's a surprising story from a place where they've never heard of another place. Terrell Jones is a high school student, just moved with his family to Gwinnett County, Georgia. Do you know where that is?
No, I don't.
Gwinnett.
Now, I never heard of Gwinnett.
That's not one of the counties. Atlanta actually is so big now, it takes over a couple of counties. That's
Polk,
not one of them.
Right? Polk's
yeah, and
big
I think
county.
DeKalb or something DeKalb. Like that.
Well, we've never heard of Gwinnett, and in Gwinnett, they'd never heard of where Terrell was from. You see, Terrell was from Hempstead, New York. That's on Long Island, in case you don't know that. When he went to his new school, Grayson High School, Terrell wore his school's, his town's shirt. Said Hempstead on it. Unfortunately, people at Grayson got the wrong idea. A teacher spotted Terrell's shirt, thought that Hempstead was one of those subtle drug reference t-shirts from Abercrombie and Fitch that, you know, the kids like. Threw him out of the class. He was detained in the school's office until he could finally convince school officials to search the internet.
Was it his geography teacher that booted him? Doesn't say, I guess.
Wow.
After a quick search of the internet, they found out that Hempstead was just his hometown. They did cave and allow him to continue wearing a Hempstead t-shirt. His parents, however, are furious. Oh, jeez. If you want to be furious about ignorance, why did you move to the South?
I just want to be mad all the time.
Yeah. What's that, Mike?
Actually, our intern, Lori Ann, used to live in Gwinnett County.
Gwinnett County?
Yep.
Is it near Atlanta?
30 miles.
Come on in.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, here's Lori Ann, our intern. Lori Ann's from North Bend, right?
Yep.
So you lived in Gwinnett?
I did.
What is that?
Gwinnett County is about 20 minutes east of Atlanta.
Oh, so it's not some far-flung one-tooth corner of Georgia.
See, now I heard Gwinnett was a toad in South Africa that if you licked it, you got hot. And I don't want you wearing any Gwinnett paraphernalia to this job,
okay.
Young Missy.
That's fine.
Okay.
Did you like it there in Gwinnett? Is it a nice place?
It's growing very quickly. When we first moved there, it was a very small town.
So people heard about the frogs.
And by the time we left, the highway into the subdivision was 6 lanes. And so we were like, time to get out of there. It was supposed to be a small North Bendish.
See, here we do you the favor of keeping it down to 2 lanes.
Right.
Just go at it half a mile an hour. All right, thank you.
By the way, Gwinnett named after, I'm looking up here, Button Gwinnett, one of the 3 Georgia members who are Georgia residents who signed the Declaration of Independence.
No kidding.
Yep.
Didn't know that.
Yep.
I
and then he
it
stole
was
all that Cherokee land and made it Gwinnett County.
I thought it was another name for crack. I don't know. What do I know? So here's what's happening. I mean, the parents are furious. I don't even know why this would be a news story. It's obviously a little slice of life. The parents are trying to get all this publicity. Will they sue? I don't know. It does bring up the question, is there anybody out there who's been asked not to wear something? Asked, please do not wear that here.
My kid?
I just was.
Were you?
You were? You were just asked?
You just told me not to wear any Gwinnett paraphernalia.
Oh, get out of here. That was just kidding. That was kidding. Okay.
So we made her button up her shirt. That was
yeah.
Nice of us.
You're asked to undress now. I'm kidding. See,
my
that's
kid?
Kidding, too, because
wow.
I could get in trouble.
Ryan couldn't wear one of those Abercrombie shirts to, not this year, but a year ago, to her school. When
Which
she was
one?
Still, the two Wongs can make it white Chinese laundry one. Remember that?
Oh, that's bad.
What was
this? That bad?
It was a joke. It was a racial joke sold by Abercrombie and Fitch, which is big with all the kids.
There's nothing in the joke that says there's anything bad about people.
I know. But remember the
to
big
me,
stink
yes,
about that
is.
Shirt?
What's wrong
two
with that?
Two Wongs can make it white.
I knew you
walked right into that.
I know I did.
I get asked all the time not to wear certain things.
Thongs?
No, you know? My wife is always, take that shirt off. It doesn't even cover your belly. Any
half shirt?
Yeah, any shirt that...
That's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Virgin.
1-800-252-1025. Have you been asked not to wear something because of what it says? Or actually, if you're exposing your midriff, that'll get through too. 1-800-252-1025. Adam in Seattle.
Yes, sir.
What have you been told not to wear?
Well, it rarely happens, but I wear utilikilts every day. And it's actually the official company uniform, so we can write them off because they're kind of spendy. But one customer site, the president of the company apparently took offense and didn't want me on premise with my kilt on.
He took offense to a man in a skirt.
Apparently, yes. What? So what does that say about his security, you know?
What does it say about your company that's the uniform? What do you do?
We're a technology company. We do IT outsourcing for small and medium-sized business.
I don't even know what that is.
Well, what? You know, I can explain it, but you probably wouldn't be interested.
IT outsourcing?
Yeah, basically, you know, the small business likes to use technology, but they don't know how to manage it.
You
so
fix
they
computers.
They hire us to do it.
I got it.
Fix networks for small businesses, right?
Yeah.
All right, now that makes sense. All right,
it's not like you're up on ladders all day. Hey, nice coconuts.
Here's Barbara in Seattle. Have you ever been asked not to wear something?
Yes, I have.
Go ahead.
I was wearing a t-shirt in junior high which had the formula for cocaine on it.
There is a formula for cocaine?
I thought it was a secret formula.
I thought it was buried in a mountain in Atlanta.
That's Coca-Cola.
That's Coca-Cola.
It was a chemistry formula for cocaine.
You mean the chemical compound of cocaine? And is it not a formula?
I honestly don't know. It just
you
I
just
was,
thought it was cool.
I was told that it was the formula for cocaine. I actually knew it, and probably shouldn't have worn it, but I was young and thought I was cool.
Thank you, Barbara. Here's Jerry in Seattle. Jerry.
Good morning, guys. Me and some friends had gone down to a well-known theme park down there in Los Angeles, California, and we were told not to wear two shirts in. One of them was a shirt that had the letters high on it made out of hash pipes and spelled out the word high. That one I kind of understood. The other one a woman was wearing, and they wouldn't let her in with it, and all the shirt said was USDA prime beef.
And they wouldn't let you in Disneyland with that shirt?
Correct. We could buy one of their shirts, but we couldn't get in with a USDA prime beef shirt.
What do you do? Do you go back to your car and take off the shirt?
You either buy their shirt or you go back to your car and switch or you go home.
Got it. I don't know about this next call. Jared in Fall City. Jared?
Hey.
Hi.
Well, I've been told not to wear many, many different things, one of which was at Mount Sinai High School. For my birthday, I decided to go into as close to legally possible to my birthday suit, so I wore a thong and a trench coat in.
The thong might have been okay, but trench coats have a terrible name in high school these days.
Clearly.
Yeah, well, they all kind of caught on because I didn't have anything on my ankles and my chest. So actually, there's people hunting around the high school for me. I had people hiding me in alcoves. And it was a good, interesting day doing my final driving exam like that.
And you eventually got kicked out, or did you hide?
They caught me, but because I was friends with the person who caught me, I was able to go to one class before I was sent home.
Nice. In the one class that you were at, were you a distraction?
I don't really know. It was driver's ed. I mean,
did anybody crash?
Distraction.
Thank you, Jared. Troublemaker. Craig in Snohomish.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good.
Hey, Disneyland, same deal. It got to the gate. I was a young kid into cars. Had a deal on a... In front of my shirt, it said, injection is nice, but I'd rather be blown. They wouldn't let me in. My dad was so mad.
It was a car.
It's a carburation, right.
Yeah, I mean, I was a kid. I didn't even know what the shirt meant.
Oh, your dad dressed you up like that for an amusement park? That's great.
Dad had no idea what shirt I had. He didn't even look at it. Sure. They stopped us right at the gate, and my dad made me put the shirt on inside out.
Folks, that's a dirty shirt.
You had one of those families where everyone slept on the bed, including the family dog, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Eric has the cocaine formula. That's the chemical compound of cocaine, right?
Yes.
C17H21NO4. Just say NO4. Shane is in Renton. Shane, what did your shirt say and you were told not to wear it?
I actually had a shirt that my dad had gotten me during the 84 Olympics that had the Olympic symbols across it, mm-hmm. with one way over on the other side. And the caption for the shirt was, "Let the Russians play with themselves."
Was that when we were
going to... That was the Moscow Winter Games,
right? We
were
going to boycott those games, right? Jimmy Carter made a statement that we may boycott the game.
No, 80. We did boycott.
We did boycott in 80.
So in 84...
We boycotted 84, the Russians boycotted.
Right.
That doesn't seem like a harsh T-shirt.
My teacher felt that it had sexual overtones and made me turn it inside out, and then when I wore it the second time, she kicked me out of class.
Nice, Shane. Derek, and you're next. Derek in Tacoma, what were you told you can't wear?
I was told I couldn't wear Ozzy Osbourne Bark at the Moon T-shirt. Because I don't know if you guys remember the T-shirt back in the day, or on the very back of the shirt, it had the wolf claw, like, ripping the shirt.
Uh-huh.
So I went and I cut that out, so it looked like the claw really ripped my shirt.
Dude!
And it was showing the skin of my back.
Oh!
And my school didn't like the fact of showing too much skin, I guess you could say.
You're showing back skin, sir.
You
march right
bad.
Back home.
Bad.
Thank you.
Oh.
That was before Britney made it much cooler to show more skin. Dick in Aberdeen. Dick.
Yes. I had a hat, and it said, "Ma wants Pa to get a new Peterbilt for Peterbilt trucks." And they said, "Dude, take that off."
What?
I'm serious. It was Peterbilt trucks and big logging community. And they said, "That's ridiculous," and made me take it off. I said, "All right, whatever."
Ma wants Pa to get a new Peterbilt.
Thank you. Patrick is next. Patrick in Olympia. What were you told? You cannot wear this.
We were told back when at the original bombing of the two towers in New York back in the early 90s, not to wear American flag lapel pins.
What? In the United States, you were told that?
I thought it went the other way. No, it was the management of the company was afraid that it would somehow represent that we were taking a stand
toward national security.
It was really, and this is a municipality agency.
What? Yeah, is this a...
They were afraid that we would be making some kind of political statement. I wasn't the only one. There were other people there that were not allowed to pay, lapel pins or American flags.
Can you be more specific about which workplace?
Well, we're involved in public transportation.
Around here?
In Olympia.
There's only buses.
Yeah.
They don't have a commuter train.
Of course, by the time the second... bombing of the towers, of course, the crashing of the towers, we were allowed to wear lapel pins.
Oh, so you're talking about when they drove the truck bomb in?
Yeah,
right.
The drive bombing.
First time.
The drive-in, you weren't allowed to wear a flag, and then once the twin towers were attacked and brought down, then it was, where's your flag?
They were handing them out then, probably.
Yeah, then it was a whole different situation.
Goofy. Next up is Larry in Fort Lake Stevens. Larry?
Hi.
What were you told you couldn't wear?
Well, back when, just a long time ago now, back when they were still building I-40, it used to be Route 66, and I had this shirt with a picture of a highway sign on it. It said Route 69, the only way to travel. And I was wearing that to graduation practice, and I was asked to stand up in front of the whole school and asked to take the shirt off or go home.
You know, why wouldn't they pull you aside quietly?
Oh, I don't know. It was the vice principal of boys at the time. This was quite a while ago now. This was back in...
Yeah, Greavy, I think his name was. All right, thank you. Next up is Paul in Bremerton. Paul.
Yes.
What were you told you can't wear?
Okay, I was doing community services at the Kitsap County Humane Society. And I was wearing this Harley Davidson T-shirt that read, "Write it like you stole it" on the back, and I was told to go home.
For community services.
Write it like you stole it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Thank you. We have a whole bunch more. All right, one more before the break. Ooh, no, Don.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah. Explain the shirt before you tell me what it said.
It was bright orange, and it had a big... beaver on the front of it, and it was the Dirty Beaver Jug Band. And in big black letters, it said, "Eat."
Thank you.
And I wore it on Fridays at Catholic Church. You got to wear anything you want. And I wore it to school. Had no idea the meaning of it. And Sister Matthew said, "Do you have any idea what that shirt means? And does your mother know you have it?" And I said, "My mom bought it for me."
How would the
more importantly, sister? Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. The sister knows. That means she wasn't always pure as the driven snow, huh?
Yeah.
She had a shirt that said, "Sister Teresa, keeping choir boys safe since 1965.
Did your mom explain anything? Did you? What was the aftermath from the Catholic school?
They made me wear the shirt inside out, and they called home, and I had to go to the principal's office, which was another nun, and sit there most of the day, and my mom couldn't leave work to come and get me, so the solution was for me to wear the shirt inside out.
Especially like the ones that really aren't any big deal, but
right.
When it is a big deal and you don't even know it's a big deal, that's interesting too. What have you been told you're not allowed to wear here? Whether it was at work or school or Disneyland.
They're strict at Disney.
They are.
Absolutely.
I actually got asked to take something off at Disneyland. It was what I thought was very innocent, but it might have saved my life. I was wearing a red bandana, and the guy came up and said, "You're going to have to remove your bandana." I said, "Why?" He says, "Well, I don't know where you're from, but down here, certain guys wear red and certain guys wear blue, and they spend a lot of time shooting at each other, so we don't allow that in here."
In Disney?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, gangs down there in
They're
LA.
At the park?
You bet it's gang day at Disneyland. You bet it is.
There's no such thing.
But they go in droves, because they're entitled to have, not that I'm all for gangs at all, but they're entitled to have
gangs
the gang affiliation.
Gangs enjoy the rides?
You bet they do. I've seen tons of gang members being perfectly good citizens while in Disneyland. I have. You see a bunch of vatos.
How do you know they're a gang member?
Because they're wearing blue bandanas or you can see them hanging out their back pockets. And
so the gang guy, by night, he's shooting up neighbors in busted drug deals. By day, he takes his wife and kids to the park.
They go with other gang members and their girlfriends. And they go hang out and enjoy the park. Anybody else is entitled to enjoy the park.
Wild. What were you told? You may not wear that here. Brian in Seattle.
Yeah, I got a black T-shirt with white skeletons. And they're laying down doing it. And the caption says, "Love never dies."
That's nice. Over like Halloween or something.
Yeah. But unfortunately, I worked at my mother's house.
Skeletons can't do it. Because all skeletons can do is clack against each other. That's all they can do. They don't have it to do with. That's interesting. Thank you. Doc in Everett. Doc?
Hey, how's it going?
All right, what were you told you can't wear that here?
Well, actually, it was a black T-shirt and red and white lettering. It says, "I love to ride hard, I love to ride long." It was a Harley Davidson shirt. On the back of it, it says, if you can read this, "My bitch fell off, and I'm now accepting applications." And that was in school. Which I rode my bike into school that day, and all my teachers didn't find that to be very appropriate, so they sent me to the office on that one. Well, I argued with the principal about it, and he decided to suspend me, so I sat out in front of the school for a little while, revving up my Harley and flagging my shirt.
Very nice. This will ensure a good relationship with everybody when you do finally eventually return. Thank you. Doc, and here is another Doc. Two Docs in a row.
That's what I heard.
You're also Doc in Everett?
Yes, sir.
Is this
Doc
some
Holliday
sort?
The only one in captivity.
Is this some sort of cult or gang?
Oh gosh, I hope not.
Convention.
The next Doc in Everett. Go ahead.
Well, at any rate, I got this shirt. It was a gift, and I didn't pay attention to what was on the back. And it was a pair of skeletons in a missionary position, and it said, "Make no bones about it. It ain't over till it's over."
Another Doc with the exact same shirt.
I wore this to work. My boss is the one who pointed it out to me.
No, the other. Wow.
Why do I feel like I'm in some kind of freaking Outer Limits time warp here? Tom in Auburn. Tom.
Hi. I am a capitalist parts salesman, and back in the day when Mount St. Helen blew, I decided, working for a Ford dealership, that I should advertise our air filters, so I made some T-shirts up that said, "Use Motorcraft air filters to get your ash out." and I was told I couldn't sell those because
that's
it was
a
derogatory.
That's a strong stretch there. I mean, that's a long stretch. There's no way that I would even get that.
Well, that's just a practical statement. You don't want ash in your engine. You're selling a filter to prevent that. And I would have fought that one a little, I think.
Well, my boss at the time was just like prudish, and he felt that people would think it said the other word that didn't end with an H.
Thank you. Scott in Arlington, your shirt said what?
My buddy went to Mexico and brought me back a shirt, and remember the Budweiser frogs? Budweiser.
Right.
This said Bud Smoker, and I had a joint coming out of the frog's mouth, and my boss made me take it off.
What do you do for a living?
Airline pilot.
I work for a water company.
So did Tommy Chong.
Thank you, Scott. Would you love me? Oh, 2.5 KZOK. That's Michelle Branch. What the heck with her? That's Kenny Aronoff on drum.
I wish she'd shut up so I could hear the drummer.
Listen in. If you're not a drummer and you don't know Kenny by name, you know his music, whether you listen to the hit songs on the charts today or the greatest music ever recorded on classic rock KZOK. He's played with Mellencamp, The Stones, Willie Nelson, Bob Dylan, Elton John, Bob Seger, John Fogerty, Joe Cocker, and youngsters like Avril Lavigne, Michelle Branch, and Hilary Duff. Also, Ashley Simpson. Kenny Aronoff, welcome back to the Bob Rivers Show and first time in the studio. How are you?
How you doing? Nice to see you guys.
Boy, what's really amazing, I mean, we talked to a lot of people, famous people and people who played with famous people and all that, but what's really amazing about your career is that you span generations and musical styles and that, in fact, you are obviously versatile, but you're in demand from anyone who wants that beat, that he wants their drum track to sound astounding. First off, how proud are you of that? And second of all, how do you get there? How do you deliver for anybody, whether their music happens to be young pop or classic rock?
The hardest thing is to the most difficult thing is to convince people that they should hire you, because in any career, like, you get labeled. Oh, that guy's that guy.
Right, he's Bob Dylan's drummer.
Yeah. He's a country drummer. He's a rock drummer. And when I was living exclusively in Indiana, which I live in L.A. too now, but I got that roots rock vibe of being, you know, John Mellencamp's drummer. But what happens? I started to pursue
Nashville. You have to pursue it.
I pursued Nashville. And when the country thing got real big in the early 90s. And because Mellencamp, Farm Aid kind of got slipped a little bit into that kind of country rock thing, suddenly I was on everybody's country record. So that worked there. But in the late 80s, because Mellencamp was so big in rock and roll, it kind of got me in the door in New York and L.A., just because you're in a famous rock band doesn't mean you're going to be a studio drummer at all. They're
two completely different
So to be able to cross over from being in a band and then being a studio drummer is hard enough, but then to be able to work, you know, be able to do like a Cinderella record, which is what you're talking about, and then to be on a Smashing Pumpkins tour or work with Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath, and the next thing you know, you're on this pop record.
Hilary Duff.
Yeah, I mean.
Okay, we're gonna play now. All right, are we ready?
Yeah, it's such a. I don't know. I think that there's only very, 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 very few drummers who've got the reputation that you can cross over.
There has to be part businessman and in addition to playing incredibly well, obviously, part branding manager and businessman, and you have to have that ability to market yourself. I was curious, though, with regards to drumming, it's one of the most interesting parts of all music, I think a great drum track can do so much for a song. We all know that it starts. A good song is a good song. A bad song is a bad song, no matter how good you play on it. But drummers, it seems to me, and we think of a band as, you know, the four lads from Liverpool, and this one's the drummer, and that. It seems to me that drums is the thing that's most often, when they get to the studio, even in a band that has a drummer, sometimes they bring in another guy.
Well, that's
it was
what
the, that was
that's
the thing
what
with
I
Ringo.
Hi,
right?
Kenny. That's what they bring me in. But hey, listen,
do you ever have to be like keep it quiet that you played on something?
I'm gonna. You know what? Usually I don't, but I'm going on Monday. Have to keep. I'm gonna do a since I'm the chick guy now.
Yeah. How do you like being around all those young girls too? I don't want to get off on a tangent, but it must be great.
Nah, it's better to be around older women.
Okay.
I don't want to be around. What are you gonna do with it?
Well, I'm not saying you're gonna do anything.
Come
Winston.
On. Well, you said it happened to you. How so?
Well, what happened was when I first got in the in with Mellencamp, and I'd only been in the band for 5 weeks. Went out to L.A. That was 1980 to make the big record. I told everybody, you know, I was going to go to L.A. to make this record. I was psyched. And when I got there, I didn't have the cool equipment. I didn't have the experience at the level that the producer, Steve Cropper, who was in the Blues Brothers, you know, you got to get the drums first. If you can't get a drum track, you're in trouble. Because everybody builds on top of the drums.
Right.
Even if the whole band is playing, you're looking for the drum track. So, and basically in about an hour, I was out of the session. I think they saw, when Steve Cropper came to Bloomington, Indiana, and watched us rehearse, he saw the tension that was going on between me and John. I'd just gotten in the band, and, you know, it was like I'd come from a whole different musical background at that point. I had rock and roll in me, because I'd played ever since I was a kid rock and roll, but the what John was looking for was Charlie Watts, and I was coming from more technique and fusion and a more technical background at that point. And he was a little frustrated, and I was trying to do the best job I could, and it was tension. And Steve Cropper, who's all about feel, saw this. So he had it in mind, as what people do all the time. They call me up to do exactly what happened to me, which is be in the wings waiting. And I came in, and I had like, in the 80s, everything switched. In the 70s, what was hip was single-headed tom-toms, thick drum heads.
Thick drum heads.
In the 80s.
Dry sound.
Yeah.
Right.
In the 80s, it went back to the traditional jazz sort of setup. Two heads, thin, like a coated ambassador drum heads, which gives you more tone. And I came to LA just as that had already turned around, and I didn't know. I was living in Indiana. I wasn't hip to what was hip. And so I was out, and a pivotal moment in my career was...
You got bumped out of a session.
Yeah.
Wow.
Last time, too, I bet.
Pivotal moment in my career, a lot of people don't know this, was John said, well, cool, man, you go back to Indiana, you know, I'll pay you for the rest of the week, which was like... like $150 or something.
Right.
And I went, no.
Thank you, John Cougar Menstrual Cramp. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Military camp. No. But I said, no, I'm not going. And I was thinking, like, who said that? You know, it just came out of me. It was like they're total, like, you know, forced into a corner and you come out fighting. I said, no. I said, listen. I said, am I your drummer? And he went, yeah. And I went, well, then I'm going to stay here. You don't have to pay me anything. I'll sleep on the floor. I'm going to go to the studio. I'm going to watch these guys play my parts, and I'm going to learn from them, and I'm going to benefit from that. Because I'm your drummer, you're going to benefit from me learning from them. And that was it. I stayed there for a month, and I did learn a lot, and I wrote down all this stuff that I thought. I talked to the engineers, the producers, and figured out what I needed to do to improve.
So you weren't stuck up. You were determined, and you were willing to learn.
I was super competitive with myself. And so I went home, and I set up a practice routine, and I practiced 8 hours a day until they came back, which was about 2 months. And then it was like a 45-degree climb through my career, just steady as she goes, and then I just got better and better. And it was my destiny to, be a good studio musician. Just because you're a good player doesn't mean you're a good session player. It is way more to it than your talent. It's your wisdom of music, your ability to get along with people. It's your determination to do what's right for the music and to leave your ego out of it all.
And now, 25 years later, you're the guy putting people everywhere out of work.
Well, the
no, we're having the an inter- and we're having
hey,
an
dude,
interview.
Pro Tools is putting me out of work.
There you go, man.
I'm putting myself out of work by every time I record a new computer, they have my tracks.
Yes, and they have your drum hit.
Yes,
and
so
they synthesize.
Listen,
it.
You won't believe a lot of times I come in and when I work with the same producer, I remember doing Michelle Branch's second record and the producer John Shanks, you know, he says, well, these are the tracks you're going to work on. I'm sitting there bringing up the faders on the mixing board and go, wow, that's my part from the last album. And they can demo out all these things. Heck, there's one song on the second Michelle Branch record where Sheryl Crow plays on it. That's my drum track from a Joe Cocker record.
Sweet.
They paid me for it.
They'll take a lick. Maybe not as much
as if I've been there the whole time.
That's right.
Yeah, though they can take my drum parts, chop them up, add the fills, move this around, speed it up, and they got it. So I'm putting myself out of work.
We were having an argument earlier this morning, and I wanted to get your opinion on it. And now I'm getting a little bit of the answer ahead of time, because you're talking about how there's session drummers, and then there's just very talented drummers. They're not the same. We were having the Ringo Starr argument. Ringo never got his due. He was always sort of treated like not the greatest member of the Beatles. But in listening to those records, I think he was one of the most creative drummers in history.
Absolutely.
And I think he was brilliant. Where you weigh in on
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. The reason why Ringo didn't get the reputation was, like, you have to remember, that was the 60s. And prior to the 60s, it was jazz. You had guys like Buddy Rich and Gene Krupa and Elvin Jones and Philly Joe Jones, and you had, you know, the reference point was technique. And that's what was the big thing. I was one of those guys that was a snob. It's like, oh, Ringo can't play.
Can you play a little jazz for us on the desk here?
On the notebook trash cans combo we've set up?
Well, there's your ride cymbal. Anyway. Or Buddy, you know.
Right, and but, Ringo's but, just going...
But, yeah, but you know what happened? I appreciated Ringo, but I fought it and fought it and fought it till I wrote three articles for Modern Drummer. They asked me... That was like in the early 80s, I think, and they asked me to write, since I was like the new upcoming drummer, why don't you write a column for Modern Drummer magazine? I started doing it, and I ran out of ideas, and the guy said, why don't you do something on Charlie Watts or Ringo Starr, since your whole philosophy... working with Mellencamp is less is more, see? Which was, trust me, I became the guy I used to make fun of, you know? And because I have a full degree in classical performance, it was either bebop or Bartok. You know, I was kind of a snob. Like, a lot of times you are when you're, you know, your technique is more valuable than the musicality of someone like Ringo. Anyway, I did these articles, and I started going through all the Beatles songs, and I fell into exactly what you were talking about. The creative ideas, the parts were brilliant. His feel is you can't imitate his feel. It's just a certain the balance between how he opens his hi-hats to how hard he hits the drums. There's a thing, his whole body playing the drums has a certain feel and a certain energy, and as you were mentioning before, the drums, unlike any other instrument, can affect the feel of the music more than any other instrument.
I received a letter from a listener a few weeks back, and it was after we had some great classic rock artists in here, and we have, you know, from time to time, really legendary performers in here. And he said, oh, every time you have a legendary performer in there, you always go, what are some great stories about someone, you know, all whacked out and barely able to play the show? You know, all the drug tales always come out. He said, next time you have someone in there like that, why don't you ask them who's the biggest teetotaling, vegetarian, macrobiotic, straightest, clean livingest people they ever saw on the road? Is it you? I guess not.
Man. No.
Of all the big stars, who amazed you with how
clean,
organized, no partying, no carousing?
There are those people. I can't. Let me think now.
Don't know any of them.
No,
we're staying in separate hotels.
Yes.
You know the funny thing is,
I refuse to work with people like that.
I think, well, like, you know, like, for example, like Charlie Watts, who was a vegetarian. Didn't drink, didn't smoke. I mean, he may have done in the early days, but you're thinking the Rolling Stones, you know what I mean?
I wouldn't think that.
No, you wouldn't think. And believe it or not, Mick Jagger cleaned his act up real early, too. He wasn't always, but he did. But when he started, you know, he manages the Stones. He did that. He figured that out quick. I mean, that's one example. But there are people. I picked that because you think of the Stones and you think of the 60s.
Keith,
like, heroin. You know.
He didn't mention Keith.
I know, but that's Keith. The image Keith. People have of the Stones. That's the image people bring of the Stones.
Exactly.
Party Keith, boys, the ultimate
Keith
bad boys.
Somehow has the half life of plutonium. We don't know how he.
I'm trying. Yeah,
he has his own atomic number.
Yeah.
He's pickled. He's pickled.
Yeah. He is.
I mean, you do enough of it. You do enough of it, and you just. You just pickle.
He's got that cockroach thing yeah. going for him.
Yeah, if he stops, he'll probably die. I mean, that's what happened. Johnny Cash, when he stopped doing drugs, he kind of like, all of a sudden, it went, beow, down. Oh, wait, somebody else, Waylon Jennings, the same thing.
Same way, yeah.
Waylon, he stopped doing drugs, and he started like, all of a sudden, it was the end.
The system was used to it, I guess.
You know, that's why I'm not going to, yeah. I'm not going to stop playing drums.
Oh, good.
If I stop, I'll probably like.
Are you going to be here for Farm Aid? You playing?
It's just funny. Somebody asked me to play, you know, because I used to do it all the time with, I used to do it with Mellencamp, but then I was the house drummer. It was 1 year, I was 11% of the bands I was playing with. As a matter of fact, Bruce Hornsby called me up and said, hey, you want to play bongos on this song? I says, yeah, that'd be good, man. Brings me up to 11%. I was 10% until, and I did. I went literally on stage and played with Molo, the drummer.
Is it hard for you to remember all... I mean, there must be a catalog in your head of 1,000 songs that you may be called on to play on stage in concert. You have to study hard before you...
Oh, yeah.
Show. Yeah, I bet.
What I do is I have files. Like, I have the Smashing Pumpkin file, the Bob Seger file, the Joe Cocker file, the Mellencamp. I have all these charts. And now I'm scanning them into my computer. But I have files of all these charts. So, like, when we started rehearsing with Melissa, there was, like, about 40, 50 songs. I didn't rehearse at all on my own because I came in with my file, has the tempos, and I can read. Like,
read music live while you're playing.
Oh, I can read easy now. I got it down.
You ever find yourself in the middle of a song and all of a sudden, wait a minute, I'm playing something totally different than what's going on the rest? But
nah,
nobody
he's
seems
never
to
made
notice.
A clam in his life.
Nah,
I don't mean a bad hit. I don't mean a bad rhythm. I mean, but with that many songs in your head, you ever been in the middle of a song and
you
think it's so close to this, like you said, they took this, and all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute. You know, they're just all they're doing here is.
You know what? I've refined my system so much. My memory is so good now. I don't know what I've done. It's like it's the way I focus. I think I'm not focusing so much on the people raising the girls raising their shirts off and showing.
That was a distraction in years younger.
Oh, with Mellencamp?
Yeah.
I used to get people to write me book reports on their chest. You know, and now. Hey, you know, it's just skin. Who cares? You know what I mean? It's like, I'm joking.
Sad in a way.
No, it's not.
He's kidding. All right. He still wants you to do it, folks. Kenny, really a pleasure to see you in person.
You guys asked some pretty cool questions, I have to tell you that. No, you did.
Thank you very much.
And go Colts this year, huh?
Yeah. That's right, baby.
Hey, shut up.
That's right.
Do we have something else that Kenny has played on to take him out with? Here we go.
Do we have anything Kenny hasn't played on?
There we go, Avril.
Here's Avril Lavigne, ladies and gentlemen, Kenny Aronoff. What a great backbeat to that song. You come up with that? I mean,
yeah,
you come
yeah.
up with a...
Oh, yeah.
And then she's sitting there going, yeah, all right, I'm taking it. I'm 12 years old, and this guy's making me sound great.
Never met her.
You never met her?
A lot of these girls... You want to know the story about this? When I did this song, it was just a demo, a vocal. He laid down a vocal into a little M-box with a click track, and he played guitar, the producer. That's what I played to.
He took this drum track and built the song around it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Listen up. By the way, the M-Box
you are
is made
in careers,
yeah.
pal.
The M-Box is made by Pro Tools. You can buy it for $389.
Hey, shut up. Now, you know what? Drums are so passionate. When I play, I imagine that I'm on stage when I do that. I mean, I give it like, it's not like a job. It's serious. It's like energy channels through me. I mean, I'm literally, I think I'm on stage when I do that. I take it real serious.
Hey, do you have to go?
No.
We got one more break. You want to stay for one more break?
Please.
Kenny Aronoff will play you some more of his stuff and we'll find out how it was like to play. So are they. But they don't know. Kenny Aronoff. Drum solo on Jack and Diane. So let it rock. Let it roll. Let the Bible belt come and save my soul. Fascinating. And now that was that's the 80s, right? And that's when 82. That's when all the drums they could no longer sound tight and dry.
Right.
The drums were put through gated reverbs,
compression, room mics. All of a sudden they put them in the big rooms.
Right.
We spent like 5 hours getting that sound.
Just getting the mic things. And I've done that sort of thing. We do our song parodies, and we try to imitate these sounds.
Right.
And you literally, we will run a microphone into a tiled bathroom.
Right.
Yeah. And we will mic this and put a speaker in there.
Yeah. Crack addicts trying to get over the prolegits.
Well, it was because the thrill is to come up with new sounds for hit records.
And that nowadays, people can get drum sounds in like 30 minutes because it's...
It's like Domino's Pizza delivers your drum sound.
Right. But they know there's so much more knowledge now. Back then, we were inventing, creating new ideas. John, when we did the Scarecrow record, which, you know, I look back at let's look at the records we did with John, and because we had our own studio and we could spend months on it, that's a lot of those songs, he came to the studio, and they were folk songs. With the stuff
like serious?
I'm not kidding. The stuff I
like real Peter Paul and Mellencamp.
Various like he says I'm just Woody Guthrie, but the thing is that it went right to me, and I mean he'd just say what do you got, Kenny? I mean the pressure was intense. He'd play a song, two takes, and it was like give me a beat I've never heard, and you know you listen to it like a song, this song called Love and Happiness. You know, he was like, jing, jing, ching, 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 where the drop and those bombs. I mean, it was like a campfire song. And the beat I ended up with was like, you know, double bass drum thing. It was like, how did I get from, where the drop and those bombs, on it. I mean, it's like serious. I mean, that's like serious work. And you just beat your head all day trying to come up with that.
What a thrill, though, to take something and give it a new life like that.
Well, you know, in studios, a lot of times I'll sit there and go like, do you want me to come up with something, you know, you want me to reinvent the wheel or just do the obvious? And a lot of times I just do the obvious. Or when I overdub, like...
By the way, if they say just do the obvious, do you ever feel like, well, why do you want me then?
Well, what happens, I start sounding the same on every record. The only thing that's different is just the subtle things, and the energy maybe is slightly different. But yeah, nowadays the budgets are so low that they're moving so fast that you don't have the luxury of seriously being an artist where you have unlimited time, you know, to be creative. But that's why in those Mellencamp songs, you go from song to song to song. The drum parts are radically different.
Back in probably a few decades ago, before the record companies were actually, I mean, they're hurting now because of music downloading and such. They really did have big budgets for albums, $500,000. Go play in the studio, and they stayed out of your hair.
Yeah, Cinderella record. I was the third drummer on the album. They spent $1.2 million, and unfortunately, they only sold 60,000 copies. It got dropped.
A lot of it was on hairdressers. Yeah. Not for you, of course. Well, why not?
Just a Mach 3 will take care of that, man.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean,
you said you had a lot of fun on the Alanis Morissette record?
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't meet her. She wasn't there either.
You never met her.
Oh, dude, God. You want to know what I did on that session? That session, I flew from Philadelphia. I was on tour with Michelle Branch. I did 9 songs in 7.5 hours and got back on a plane and flew to New York. But it was like 4 Alanis Morissette songs that day, 2 Anastasia, 1 Keith Urban, 1 Gwen Stefani, and 1 Melissa Etheridge.
And a poo-poo platter to go, please.
Right.
All right, here he is,
and this
Kenny,
was one of the songs.
Kenny on Alanis Morissette's album. A lot of times you say you actually don't meet the singer.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Who have you, would you say, though, are perhaps the best lead singer friends that you have made?
Melissa Etheridge.
Right now, yes.
She's amazing.
You guys have been out on the road for like 2 years or more together.
Since 96 on and off.
Wow.
Yeah, but she's one of the most beautiful people I've ever met, you know, as far as a person. And it shows in her lyrics, and it shows in just, she's really great. But, I mean, you know, hanging around with Bonnie Raitt was fun, too, you know. I mean, who else have I met that's cool? I got a story about Chrissy Hynde, but I can't say it on the live on the radio.
Well,
it's
just say
really
she
funny.
Nailed you, huh? Yeah, she did. I want some of that.
Yo, it's funny, man. It was so funny. Can I use initials for four-letter
we'll
words?
Just call her. Oh, okay.
Can I use, like, the F? Can I say just F?
Oh, no, we've outlawed the letter F. We can't even say the letter F.
Okay.
Just
it's
say,
an Fortune 500
use,
number.
Well, I'll use just, polite I'll just, mom and dad
well,
language.
I'll do mom and dad language. Well, basically, I've always loved the Pretenders. And she's, to me, as sexy as heck. So,
sexy as heck. See, you're in the right
you're
mode.
You're going, baby.
Yeah. I'm getting goosebumps if I sang it wrong. But anyway. So anyway, we're doing the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland Stadium, where they opened up the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and she's doing Going to Ohio, which is like,
isn't that state song now, man?
God, that was just so amazing. So anyway, I said to hi to her at one point, or waved to her at one point, and she just blew me off. Then we're in the elevator, just me and her, and I said hi to her, and she didn't even hear me, and I went, God, I mean, I'm embarrassed. So at the end of the show we did, it was like I was on it, literally watched everybody for about 8.5 hours. Watching every act, one after another. Everybody was there. It was amazing. I go up to her and I say, you know, Chrissy, I've got to think of how I'm going to say this, but Chrissy, you know, every time my name's Kenny Aronoff. Every time I see
my name's Kenny Aronoff.
Every time I see you, you kind of like, you know, basically tell me to, you know, take a hike.
Yeah, exactly,
right?
A hike, yeah.
Take a hike. He says, no, darling, it's not take a hike. It's like I want to take a hike with you. So many words, you know what I'm saying?
Wow.
I went, whoa! Then Jackson Brown came up, you know, and she blew me off. But
that moment was just worth it.
And she's pouring gallons of wine in his cup, and he doesn't even drink. But she was basically, you know, it's like,
she said she was nice to you at that
moment.
It's like,
I don't want you to get lost. It's like, I want you to join me.
That's very nice.
Yeah, she's funny, man.
All right, hey, folks, you've been listening to Kenny Aronoff.
Rock on.
All right, folks. Is this you, George of the Jungle? Come on. President of the United States.
Yeah,
America?
I did this.
Do this?
For a movie.
The Brandon Fraser movie. Can we hit that real quick?
I do everything.